Morning, family. I want to welcome our visitors as well today. I know that it was a beautiful day to be out and about with the sun shining and the snow glistening. And if you're willing to fill out one of those white cards on the back of the pew in front of you, you can continue the trend of awesomeness by doing so, so we have a record of your attendance. When I was in the Marine Corps, there was one day out of the month that I absolutely hated. And it was maintenance day. You had to do it at least once a month. You had to go and you had to clean the weapons. You had to clean everything. You had to cleaning to the point of absolute ridiculousness, by the way, because no one on this earth ever cleans like the Marine Corps cleans. You could eat off of the metal parts on things that you would never dream of eating off of in the way that we were cleaning. But I don't want us to take that same attitude when we get into these Sundays where we step aside from the standard series that we're working through and we get into the Shepherd Sundays. Because these I want us to think of as a good form of maintenance for us as the body. Things that the elders are wanting to have communicated to the body in terms of maintenance to help us be better together, as well as in the community. And so this morning we're looking at armchair quarterbacks as our Shepherd Sunday subject. You may or may not have heard the name Cody Parkey at some point this week. But if you have, and some of you have, I can tell by the smiles on your faces, especially the Packers fans. He's a kicker for the Chicago Bears. At least he was last week. Does he still have a job, Wes? Okay. Everybody seemed to be talking about him this week. Morning radio people, just talking about his missed field goal in that game, the playoff game last week, to cause the Bears to lose against the Philadelphia Eagles. He kind of joins the ranks of Jay Feely. You guys ever heard of Jay Feely? Some of you guys are nodding your head. Yeah, in the minds of a lot of fans. It's interesting, though, because it came out later that Parkey didn't actually miss that field goal. He had plenty of other misses, but he didn't miss that field goal, that it was blocked. Yeah, and I have a hard time pinning a loss on a guy, and I've already talked with Wes because he's the only Bears fan I know. I'm being serious. That wasn't a joke. I have a hard time blaming a loss on a guy that scored the most points in the game. Look it up. Cody Parkey scored the most points for the Chicago Bears in that loss, and he was the kicker. So I have a hard time. Anyway, the point is, the backlash from fans and commentators was just insane, right? And of course, you always get those guys that sit at home and say, well, I could do that. I could do better than that, right? You always get that kind of argument. Baseball, football, soccer. Well, nobody watches soccer, right? Those sports that people watch. Where we sit and we could critique everything about everything that's going on the screen and how we could do a much better job than that. I did appreciate that there was a Chicago business that opened it up this week to say that if you think you can do better, come down and show us. And they had 101 people show up to try and kick a 43-yard field goal, and all of them failed. So I did appreciate that, you know, that they were willing to do that. But we get into this frenzy about these things, like, a football game is going to have some bearing on things eternal. But it's not just football, right? We armchair quarterback almost everything in life. And we come out of the woodwork when things don't go the way that we expect them to go or the way that we want them to go or the way that we know that they should go, right? And usually we know when an armchair quarterback is around because they're like vegans. They'll tell you about it. They will communicate it to you in such flowery language of how they could do a better job and how they're unhappy with where they're at in A, B, C, D, or E. It doesn't matter. But it usually revolves around the phrase, I could have done that better. It's like the old, now I can't think of the name of the musical. Everything I can do, you can do, I can do better. What is that, Dan? It was the Annie Oakley musical. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's kind of like that attitude that we present in it. And it doesn't matter if it's a boss, if it's a coworker. We know that we could do better, and everyone else knows that we could do better because we're telling them that we can do better about it. And we find ourselves armchair quarterbacking because, I'm convinced, because of our false sense of superiority. We think we're better than them. And that's why we could do better than them. And we're better than them in every way whenever we're looking at something. And we know that we're better than them in every way and that we should have been the one in charge all along. And it's because of this attitude that something happens within us. There's a change in our mentality. There's a change in the way we view people, right? And it's not for the good and it's not for the better because this viewpoint is directly opposed to God's view of who he would have us be in the world that we find ourselves working and operating in. And this is heart, mind, and soul. When you go back to our reading from 1 Peter, when he talked about humbling yourselves, God will be the one to exalt you. In the verse previous, it had said, Peter quotes from the Old Testament saying that God is opposed to the proud but gives grace to the humble. This is the attitude of heart that we're called to live, right? Because we're not going to be able to love God and love our neighbor, actually, if we're not humble enough in the way that we view things. So if we carry around a constant sense of a superiority complex, we're not going to be able to accomplish those things. And it's going to lead us into dissatisfaction. And then dissatisfaction will lead us to sin. This is the case when you turn into Numbers chapter 16. In Numbers chapter 16, we get introduced to a guy named Korah. This is not the same spelling of the little Korah that we know and love here. But we're introduced to a man named Korah. And in verse 1, we read, "Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi." So this guy has some chops, right? He's descendant of Levi. He's a pretty big deal. "With Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben, took action. And they rose up before Moses, together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen in the assembly, men of renown. They assembled together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, 'You have gone far enough, for all of the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?'" Now, a couple of things I want us to notice here in these verses as we're just parking here for a second is, first, Korah is unhappy with Moses and Aaron's leadership. That's pretty obvious. At least I hope that we viewed that as obvious. Second, he's got a following. Now, let me ask you guys a question. How did Korah get a following? Because he probably went around talking to people saying, "I could do that better." And don't you agree? So he has a following of people. 250 leaders of the nation, men of renown, have sided with Korah in this dissatisfaction with Moses and Aaron's leadership. And here's the other thing I want us to notice. He probably could have done the job. He is a descendant of Levi. Is he not? He's actually of the same. He's really closely related to Aaron when you look at how they all tie together in the family tree. He's very closely related to Aaron. He probably could have done the job. But he wasn't called to do that job. Aaron was. We know that when Moses is at the burning bush and he's making his excuses and God says, "Here comes your brother Aaron to be your mouthpiece for you." So we know that Aaron was called to do a specific job and Moses was called to do a specific job in the nation of Israel, right? But all of these things are pointing to Korah's dissatisfaction with where he finds himself in the nation. His position, his job, everything, all of this is pointing to Korah's dissatisfaction. So we jump down a few more verses to verse 28, and we see where his dissatisfaction gets him. It says, "Moses said, 'By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these deeds, for this is not my doing. If these men die the death of all men, or if they suffer the fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into Sheol, then you will understand that these men have spurned the Lord.' As he finished speaking all of these words, the ground that was under them split open, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up and their households and all the men who belonged to Korah with their possessions. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive to Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly." And we're going to continue reading. "Now, all Israel who were around them fled at their outcry, for they said, 'The earth may swallow us up.' Fire came forth from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense." That would be the men that were with Korah in this rebellion, okay? So it's from this episode We've got some people who are dissatisfied with where they are in the nation, the work that God has called them to do. And they want to do Moses' job, Moses and Aaron's job. And they can do it better. And it's God that ends up squaring them away on this, or swallowing them up, showing them where their place actually is now. And then the next day, the people come to Moses and Aaron, and guess what? This is what Israel's really good at, right? And they start grumbling. And they say to Moses and Aaron, on the next day, you just saw the earth swallow up this dude. You're going to go to the leadership the next day and say, it's your fault that these people died. Well, that's what they do. They go and they tell Moses, it's your fault these people died, and there's a plague that comes on the land. Aaron has to run out with the censer of incense and keep the plague from killing the sons of Israel. All of these things happen. It leads us into Numbers chapter 17, verses 1 through 10. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the sons of Israel and get from them a rod for each father's household. 12 rods. From all their leaders according to their father's household, you shall write each name on his rod and write Aaron's name on the rod of Levi. For there is one rod for the head of each of their father's households. Okay, so pause real quick. Here's what's happening. The people are grumbling. There's obviously some issues with people saying, well, they shouldn't be there. I should be there. You should be there. We should be there. Blah, 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 blah. And God says, you know what? I'm done. You want to know who's supposed to be where? I'll tell you who's supposed to be where. Get a rod from each of the tribes, the father's household. Bring them up here and put their names on them. We're just going to get this squared away right now because I'm tired of your complaining, is basically what the Lord is saying here. And I'm tired of you not doing what I've told you to do all this time. So you need to know your proper place. So he brings them all in. Now we're in verse 4. You shall then deposit them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony where I meet with you. It will come about that the rod of the man whom I choose will sprout. Thus I will lessen from upon myself the grumblings of the sons of Israel who are grumbling against you. Moses therefore spoke to the sons of Israel, and all their leaders gave him a rod apiece for each leader according to their father's households, 12 rods, with the rod of Aaron among their rods. So Moses deposited the rods before the Lord in the tent of the testimony. Now on the next day, Moses went into the tent of the testimony, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Moses then brought out all the rods from the presence of the Lord to all the sons of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his rod. But the Lord said to Moses, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put an end to their grumbling against me, so that they will not die. So God has gotten tired of the grumbling. He's tired of people coming up and saying, well, you're in a position that you shouldn't be in. I should be in that position. And God says, I'm done with this. All right? There's only one rod that is going to show who I have chosen to be in this position, who I have called to be in that position, and everybody else is going to know that that's the case now. We're not going to have this discussion anymore. Does this sound familiar? You ever have this talk with your kids? We're not having this discussion anymore. And it's Aaron's rod that proves he is who God is. Has said that he has been the whole time, silencing the grumbling of anyone that wants to armchair quarterback this thing. Now you might be wondering, why on earth, Jeremy, would you choose numbers 16 and 17 when we're talking about this? Because we're tempted to feel that there is no contentment and satisfaction in our part in the work of the body unless we're doing what we think we should be doing. And because we feel like there's no contentment or satisfaction as a part of the body in doing what we think we should be doing, we don't do anything else. But contentment and satisfaction as part of the body doesn't come from armchair quarterbacking things. It doesn't come from a false sense of superiority as we're looking at our brothers and sisters. Our contentment as we are working within the body actually comes directly from God. That as we humble ourselves, finding ourselves in the position that he has put us in the body, is where we find that sense of satisfaction and contentment. Look at Romans chapter 12, verses verses 3 through 8. Paul writes there, he says, "For the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a measure of faith. For just as we have many members in one body, and all the members do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, each of us is to exercise them accordingly. If prophecy, according to the proportion of his faith, if service, in his serving, or he who teaches in his teaching, or he who exhorts in his exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness." You turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and we're going to jump around a little bit here, starting in verse 4. It says, "Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of ministries, and the same Lord." Boy, too bad that Paul didn't write that for Korah way back when, right? This is not new information that Paul is presenting to us in 1 Corinthians 12. When we look back at the nation of Israel and how God had called the tribe of Levi to be fulfilling certain things, and others were going to have specific tasks, you're going to carry the ark, you're going to blow the horn, you're going to, you know, appear before the Lord on the Day of Atonement. All working within the same Spirit, all working for the same mission and same purpose, everyone with different tasks, right? "There are varieties of ministries in the same Lord," verse 6. "There are varieties of effects, but the same God who works all things in all persons. But to each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. For to one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit, and to another the word of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, and to another gifts of healing by the one Spirit, and to another the effecting of miracles, and to another prophecy, and to another distinguishing of spirits, to another various kinds of tongues, and to another the interpretation of tongues. But one and the, this is where I really want us to be paying attention to here. One and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually just as he wills. And then you jump down to verse 18. "God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body just as he has desired." So when he's adding members to the body, when he's adding parts to the body, he knows exactly where they're going to fit perfectly. And they're going to be able to do that part in the body because he understands who they are greater than we actually know ourselves. And so he's going to put us in that position inside the body working the way that he does. And so this is the idea that's being presented to us, not just from Numbers, but also New Testament writing, is that God has a plan for everyone in the kingdom and in the body. He has a part for each of us to play. And the body doesn't work the way that God designed it without all of its parts. Did you ever stop to think about that? But what if it's the part that nobody wants? Especially if it's the part that nobody wants. And here's the interesting thing about the part that nobody wants. Who determines that it's the part that nobody wants? We do. We determine that that's a lowly part. We're the ones that put that label on that, when it's actually God who says all parts are necessary. All of them are necessary. But we're looking at it going, yeah, but you know, the part that I'm in right now, Lord, I'm really just better than that. Oh, we don't say it out loud, right? We're not willing to be that brave to say it out loud, but we'll think it and we'll act it. We have to be able to humble ourselves to function as the part where we are placed, and everyone is essential. Everyone has a part of the mission. And we could spend our energy complaining about how we could do the job better than so-and-so. We could spend our time and energy formulating how we would do the job better and then sharing it and politicking about and doing whatever. Or we could just focus on doing the job that God's given us better. And moving forward with the knowledge that we're doing our part in the functioning of the body the way that God's called us to. You know, when we embrace this idea of actually getting up out of the armchair and doing the part and being a part of the body that God has called us to, this actually means we're going to have to be active in the service that we're rendering, yeah, to our brothers and sisters and in the community. And it's interesting, when you go to the book of Acts, it's fascinating when you look at this idea in the early church, in how the early church was operating inside the community and with each other, right? That these were a people who had the firm conviction that God had put them in the body, in the kingdom, added them to the kingdom for the purpose of shedding the light of Jesus into the world, being a people of God's own possession, and actively loving your neighbor. Being a part of that, everyone engaged in it. Yeah, there's some examples. Acts chapter 11 is just one example. Yeah, that we can look at where it says the disciples, now this is after Agabar has come in and said, hey, there's a big famine up north. Yeah, we need to do something to help out here. Right? Agabar comes in, and so it's at that point the disciples, as each one was able, decided to provide help for the brothers and sisters in Judea. Here's a beautiful thing about this. When you may be reading from the New American Standard, this is the NIV. The New American Standard says, as each had means, I believe is how the New American translates that. What do we often ascribe that to? Means. Money, right? That's not what it means. Oh, it's a part of it, but that's not what it means. As each had the ability, right? As each one was able. Well, I don't have any money, but you know what? I got a bunch of these goat skins over here that we can donate to the cause. I have the ability to engage in that. I don't even have goat skins, but you know what I can do is I can travel up there to make sure that this stuff is getting taken care of. I can be a part of this. That just because I don't have what I think of as the specific doesn't mean that I am not useful in the working of the body. It's kind of like what Peter said when he comes across the lame man, you know, as he's going to the temple in Acts chapter, what is that, Acts chapter 3? Yeah. And he's going to the temple, and the guy's calling out for money and alms, and Peter and John are walking by, and he catches the guy's eyes, like, hey, look at me, up here. I don't have any money. But what I do have, I'm going to help you, I'm going to hook you up with. In the name of Jesus Christ, stand up and walk. We need to open up the experience in our mind of how we are called to be a part of the body and not limit it to what we think. That God can work through us when we're humbly engaged in this service project that we call the church. And there's going to be, the sad commentary about this is, guys, there's going to be plenty of chorus. There's going to be plenty of people that'll armchair quarterback that'll say that they could do the job better than you, could do the job better than me, that could do the job better than whoever. Okay? And they'll gather, may even gather a little bit of a following in that. It doesn't matter. Your fulfillment of doing your part in the body has no bearing on what other people say they can or can't do better. It's moving forward in faith and working according to the allotment of the gift that God has given you to do in the body that matters. That's what doing our part is all about. Actively engaging with each other in the work that's being presented to us. And oftentimes, you know, the work is going to be, we know the big mission, right? Go into all the world, making disciples of all men, teaching them to confess, believe in Jesus, repenting of their sins, right? That's the big picture mission. That's what all of us are working for. But there's other times and aspects when the leadership here at Grandview is going to present jobs and missions that we are wanting to accomplish as the body. It's not our job at that point to look at the leadership and they say, okay, well, all right, we're going to do... I'll come up with a silly one real quick just to get our blood pumping. The elders have come out and said, you know what? We're going to repaint the lines on Hubble again. And we have tasked Brandon Gordon with being in charge of that project. And Mike Ogle's going to be in charge of buying paint. And Addison is his first advisor. And he has to do, we're asking Mike to do whatever Addison chooses. Whatever color of paint Addison wants to put on the street, we're asking Mike to choose that. You're already laughing because what color is Addison going to choose for the paint? Can you choose a better color than that? Can we choose a better color than that? Yes, we can. I can. Yellow is better for roads. I know that. I've got the experience. I've been driving on roads for a while. Does it matter that I can make a better decision than Addison when the leadership calls that position to be taken place? No, it doesn't. So what's my part in this silly scenario? Well, Addison can't drive, but I can. I'll give her a ride to the paint store. Addison's not very big and muscular. Nick is. Nick can carry the paint for her. Addison doesn't have a lot of landscaping experience. But Kelly does. You understand what I'm getting at here? That we're not overly concerned on the who has been put in charge, but concerned with how we're going to make it successful in our way and in our part in acting. Don't let the Korahs get you down, and don't become a Korah yourself. You don't want to get swallowed by the earth. But God's purpose continues for us. It's who we are as a people, and as the elders are communicating to us this morning, do your part in the work. Find the place where you fit. Find where your talents and services can be put to use, and don't worry about questioning decisions that were made. Figure out how you can be a part of the success of the work of the mission. That's what they're calling us to be as God's people. We're going to stand and sing the song that Jason had us mark in our books. And we never want to let an opportunity pass when we're together, whether it's as the family or we may have those here who aren't a part of the family. We never want to let the opportunity pass where we don't allow someone to seek the prayers of the body and the encouragement that's found from their brothers and sisters and their struggles and their joys and their difficulties, whatever it may be. But we also never want to let an opportunity go by without allowing someone without allowing someone to make the confession of Jesus as the Christ. That this is something we live and breathe for on this earth, to watch and rejoice with those who come to the knowledge that Jesus died for the sins of mankind. And make the confession of him as Lord and Savior of their life as they repent of their old life of sin and be buried in the waters of baptism for forgiveness. We live for that. We love it. It is the greatest thing that we ever get to witness on the face of this earth as we're walking on it. And so if you're ready to take those steps, we encourage you, come while we stand and sing.